Hey, hockey heads, get ready for the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Each game day, answer four questions. Pick the winning team, guess if points will be over or under, predict the first goal, and choose the highest scoring period. Daily winners snag gift cards, while each round's champs pocket cold, hard cash. Play now at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess. It's fast, it's fun, and it's all about hockey. Let's go.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the DFO Rundown Podcast with Frank Saravalli and Jason Greger on dailyfaceoff.com. Delivered by DoorDash.
Welcome to episode 114 of the DFO Rundown. And guess what? This is our post-trade deadline episode presented by Manscaped. After lighting the lamp, hit the showers with this all-in-one skin and hair care kit that covers you from head to toe. Literally. Manscaped. It's trusted below the waist. Now trust them with the rest. Join the 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code DFO21. The code is DFO21, manscaped.com. We welcome to the show a gentleman who's got some good scaping above the head. That's Frank Saravalli. Frankie, how you doing?
Good. I always say Manscaped, it's not a gift for you. It's a gift for your significant other.
It's very true. It is. It's very true. Well, Frank, we made it. Had a week off. Lots has happened.
Yeah, we made it to the other side. Tyler asked me the other day how I was doing. And I said, I felt like someone going down a hill on a scooter with one wheel. And somehow I made it to the bottom. And here we are on the other side of the trade deadline. And I don't know, feels like I have a life again.
Like, dude, you must be glued to your phone for like 72 hours. Like, do you have to keep an alarm on that's like so it beeps in the middle of the night? Or do you at least get a middle of the night off?
I actually check in with a few people, especially the night before deadline, before going to bed. Like, hey, are you working on anything? And I'll usually get a no, go to bed. Or I'll like, hey, got anything cooking? And they'll always respond with some sort of like snide, just popcorn, like some sort of dad joke. That signals that I can go to bed. But honestly, it's not the 72 hours before. I felt like I was chained to my desk for 6 weeks. Like so many, you know, just prepping our site and so many stories, trade targets boards and all the other deadline coverage that we had heading into it. Chris Peters, Matt Larkin, so many, Scott Burnside, you know, so much great work heading into it that, you know, there was a lot to put together and I'm really proud of that. Our show, our live stream on Monday. And like, we had massive, massive traffic numbers. Like the site literally broke a couple times because that's how many people were on it. So, it was a fun deadline and lots in the mix, lots of 28 out of our top 50 ended up being traded, Jay.
It's pretty good. Not bad. Not bad at all. So, it's hard to get the top 50 all hit because there's never that many trades. So yeah, if you get 28 out of 50, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Well, it's over the 6 week period sort of leading up to the deadline season. And, it's amazing how the board changes, especially in that last 10 days. Like think about all the guys that were off the board, Giroux, Ben Chiarot, you know, that whole group of players that were traded first to then head into deadline day and have the top seven all go. That was pretty cool. So yeah, a lot of things in the mix. Marc-Andre Fleury entered deadline day number one. He ends up getting traded to Minnesota. And yeah, it's been deadline season's over. Like I said, I feel like I have a life again. Tuesday, took the day off for the first time since Christmas, walked some holes, got in some golf. It was just good to like get out and breathe some fresh air.
Oh, hey, buddy. It's great. It was 18 degrees in Edmonton on Wednesday here. So Wow. It was, I don't know what that Celsius. I think that's like 74 or something.
Yeah, so. 68, somewhere around there. So big week for you as well. I see you got your San Jose Sharks jersey on. You know, it's funny. Your nephew, Noah Gregor, has been in the league a long time now, it feels like. And to think that last night, Thursday night, was his first trip back home to Edmonton to play a game. It was a big reminder for me of all the simple things we've lost during the pandemic.
Well, it was literally a 2-year wait. Because if you go back to March, it was March 25th where he was scheduled. The Sharks were scheduled to come to Edmonton, and you know had you know you're planning with tickets and everything, and I know how stressful it is for a young guy. Like he was a rookie then his first year, so I was kind of taking the lead and getting everything organized for our family and stuff like that. And then obviously COVID hit, so everything's postponed. And then last year you couldn't travel, you couldn't go see any of the games, and you know obviously I watch a lot of them on TV. I record every game if I'm working and doing other stuff, and then I'll watch it the next day. But it's just different, just like it is at any time. But you go to a live game, and it was very different. You know, I have an 8-year-old son, so his cousin, and you know, our family's really close. You know, my brother and I are best friends, our sister, we're all tight, so we see each other a lot. So you know, we got a suite together, and you know, Noah and myself had, everybody got Sharks jerseys as a gift. And, you know, he had autographed every one and signed a little note to each one, kind of personalized them. But you never really wear those. So it was the first time everybody's together and you're wearing it. And, you know, you get to warm up. And, you know, I was joking with him for a while. I said, buddy, you better be buckets off. Like, if I was in the NHL, I'd be bucket off guy all the time.
No Bucky warm-ups all the time. Yeah, like,
that's got to happen. And so he's been doing that lately. And
even you, though, with no hair, you'd go,
hey, buddy, I see Nurse and Cassian and a few Nick Bonino and others. Oh, yeah, man, show off the dome when you have a good shaped head, you got to show it off. So so he was there, and so my son, who's not, you know, he's not very artistic, but he made a big sign.
I saw that
for the, you know, that was like welcome home. And we got there early, right behind the net. And, you know, so Noah's skating around, and, you know, I get it. It's pretty nerve wracking, exciting, your first game. And so he's not really paying attention. Then it was like his sixth time around. Yeah, he takes a shot. He looks up and he sees the sign in Beckett there. And he has like a massive grin on his face. And
that's awesome.
And, you know, my son's pretty fired up, and you know, Noah's sister's there and everything. And so, because I remember talking to her about how she's really kind of, you know, she lost her brother at 16 when he moved away to go chase the dream in the WHL. Mm-hmm. And so for her, as you know, she was only 13 when he's 16. And so that's, you know, you kind of forget about that stuff. And so for her, it's been pretty cool just to see him live. And that was the first time even his sister and brother got to see them live. So it was emotional. But Frank, I'll tell you, to add to it, and this one's going to probably hit you and a lot of our listeners. So I don't know if you saw the game or not. I'm not sure if they broadcast it on TV, but earlier in the day, I'd found out that lots of teams do this where they have a flag bearer who comes out and stands on the blue line. And, you know, it's a big thrill for a lot of kids, right? Like you're standing there, and some players are great, you know, they give the kid a tap and whoever it is. And so they had a little boy who came out yesterday, and he's 5 years old. His name is Ben Stelter, and he's got stage 4 brain cancer, which obviously isn't good. And anyway, his father, you can follow along his story online. He kind of updates you where it at. And so Ben comes out, and they had a little helmet cam on top of him. And as you know, a little 5-year-old with cancer who's spent a lot of the last year in the hospital, you know, he's been practicing his skating. So he comes out, and Connor McDavid meets him halfway and brings him on the blue line, and the kid gets a standing ovation. And geez, it chokes me up just thinking about it, because you're just like, here's all these kids who are now grown men, and their families get to see them. And Ben's parents might not even see him see his 6th birthday. And you're just like, holy geez. So I'm an emotional guy to start. So now we see this, and I'm kind of like a mess a little bit. But that just added to it. Cause I know, Frank, you have 2 young kids, and you know, when you take a moment to think about like what that would be like. And so for Mike and his whole family, this, and the Order of fans who gave him a standing ovation, and then for the Orders to bring him up to the podium. I'm not sure if you saw the Zach Hyman clip or not, but you see teams do that, and that can make such a difference for
for a family going through such a hard time. So that really made last night even more special for me.
Yeah. So that's amazing to see. I tweeted out the photo of that the Oilers had sent out. They just said after the game, this one was for you, Ben. And so just some of the pictures are so awesome to see. And just a lot of emotion for you at the game last night. I mean, between Ben and Noah and, you know, it was 103 games for Noah to get back to the, to Edmonton. Like, that's a long time. And like I said, a reminder for everyone, you know, first off, you know, with Ben, just, you know, sort of how lucky we are
100%.
To have healthy kids and to have healthy families. And then for Noah, it's like, just the simple joy of being able to watch an NHL game in person. That wasn't something that existed for a long time, certainly in Canada. And now to get him home and to play a game in front of friends and family. I see you still have your Sharks jersey on. Did you sleep in it?
No, but I thought I'd support the teal. It's a sick jersey, by the way. Like, there's a lot of people that see it. They're just like the Sharks have always had nice jerseys.
Yeah.
And so that's a good, because I'm not a big, you know, jersey guy, but I'll definitely wear this one, you know, when nephew comes. And the other thing is, Frank, like for me, having covered the league for 20 years, there's no guarantee. Right. That guys, how, like, I've seen guys who play 3 years, they're out. Guys who play 6 years, all of a sudden they're in the minors. Like, so, you know, that's why for me, like, I watched that game very
just
different.
One game, like getting one game is such a monumental achievement to last in the league 100 and then to make it 200 or three. It's incredibly impressive. I saw, by the way, some of the photos that you posted, everyone in the suite was wearing Gregor 73 jerseys. Did it looked like he gave them all an inscription or signed them all?
Yeah. So I had 2 years ago, I got a deal with one of my buddies at a store. So I ordered them all for our family and was going to surprise them. We were all going to wear them. And then it got delayed. So I kept them. And then as a gift at 2020 Christmas, you know, I said, hey man, like, this is what I got for everybody. Why don't you sign them all? So he came over to my house and personally, you know, signed a little note. Cause, you know, like, oh, I said, awesome. our family's pretty tight, you know? So he wrote a different little message for everyone. And it was, you know, it was a cool deal. Like a few of his cousins who are older, but they're like, you know, 16 and 18. They're in the suite and they're just like, I can't believe he's in the NHL, because he's still just their cousin. Right.
Yeah,
and I think
exactly.
It's different when you see it live. Cause for me, like, I watched the game very differently last night. Like, I'm going to have to watch it again today for work purposes, because I didn't really focus on the goals. I really kind of had him on the ISO cam and you're watching just a lot of the stuff. And I was just kind of enjoying it and taking it all in, saying, man, you know what? I grew up, I didn't have kids young. So, you know, I went to a lot of his games and him and his brothers, and my sister has three boys. And so I've been to a lot of small town rinks and I love it. And so it was just kind of, you sit back and you're like, good for him. Like, I like to see people, I don't care what walk of life, right? Like when somebody, first one from your family graduates from university, that's a big deal, right? So it was pretty fun. And I knew my brother, I saw him chase the dream and he got close and went to a few NHL camps, but didn't get it. So, you know, I could see him and how you're just like, wow, it's kind of neat to see your son make it.
No question. But then to see like all that went into it, which you got to witness firsthand. And then also, you know, just from our perspective, like you go to a lot of games. I've been to, you know, so many games I couldn't count. There's no emotion in it for us. No. Like it's just going to work and you watch it and it's sterile because that's what you're programmed to do. But for you last night, like I can't tell you the last sporting event. Unfortunately, it's kind of sucked the enjoyment out of going to every other game. Like if I go to a Major League Baseball game or an NFL game or whatever it is, I don't have that same fandom excitement. Like tonight, I'm going to go over to the Sweet 16 that stops through Philly, the March Madness. Like I won't have any of the same enjoyment that other people around me will. And I kind of feel a little bit like a sociopath, because I'm like, if I clap or cheer or whatever, it's like, just because everyone else is doing it, I feel like I probably should be. Like, this is the proper emotion to have. It's just, that's how we're wired now, being in media, and for you to get a chance to go and have that enjoyment again, I think is really awesome.
Oh, dude, I can tell you, man, like prior to last night, like last night's the first time ever, you know, at an NHL game since I started working, that it was like, you're like a fan. But I go back to the games. I went to the WHL playoffs when Noah was in Prince Albert, and, you know, they won the league that year with the Raiders in 2019. And at the old Art Hauser Arena, shout out to everybody in PA, sick little barn, man. I love those small town barns. And it was jammed to the rafters. And I had my son and my brother. We were there for game 7 when they won in overtime. And honestly, that was the last time. And that might have been even better, because you're like in the crowd, you're going crazy. And it was a lot of fun. Like last night, I kind of knew that, you know, the team I'm rooting for wasn't going to win, right? Mm-hmm. Like the Sharks just aren't as talented as the Oilers. So, but it was more so taken in the moment. But you're right, it is very different. And it's a reminder of just how fun sports can truly be.
Yeah, that's the point. It should, like, that's literally the point of fandom, is rooting for your team when you know that they might not be the most talented.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You have to, you stick with it. And so, you know, it was loads of fun. And there was, you know, like, there's just lots of things I noticed. Like there was an Oiler fan, a puck went into the crowd, and this Oiler fan catches it. And there's a kid sitting right behind him in a Sharks jersey, and he turns around and gives it to the kid. Kid's like 6 years old. He's just fired right up. It's like the greatest gift he's ever had. Right. So, you know, little things like that normally I would never be watching for, because I'm kind of, you know, I'm focused on the game, or hey, who's changing, who's on the next line. So it's kind of nice where you can kind of maybe just
turn your brain off.
All in. Yeah, yeah. Take it all in. So, yeah, that was fun.
Awesome.
Yeah. So, hey, let's get to it. You and I haven't talked a lot about the trade deadline now that's come and gone. And I think there's, you know, Frank, I've seen a lot of chatter online and talking about, I think the one trade that's not getting as much hype as it should, because when I look at the importance of the player and what he's going to do on a team that's actually been rolling since January 1st, and then another big win last night. The Boston Bruins and a Hampus Lindholm, like, hey, I know Florida got Sherratt and Giroux, and that's big for them. But that Hampus Lindholm trade, Frank, like, to me, when I look at impactful trades, that one's right near the top of my list, because he's going to be playing huge minutes for a team that's, since January 1st, got the second best record in the National Hockey League.
Yeah. And guess who's knocking on the door of the, not just the Toronto Maple Leafs, but the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Oh, that's a race, man. You see that? Three it's points crazy. Separating those teams.
It's the only thing close that we have to a playoff race this year in the East is who's going to have what seed and what's the matchup going to be in the Atlantic. And that's actually going to be really important, because, you know, especially if you can hit it at the right time. What if you're Boston and you can knock off one of those teams in the first round, whether it be Florida or Tampa? That would be wild, the way that those teams have geared up as well.
Well, hey, don't look now, but there's a legit chance we could have Boston, Toronto again.
So, yeah, there is. you know what's funny? We do this daily face-off roundtable every week on Fridays, and Matt Larkin asks a question, and everyone replies all in the email. And the question this week was, what is your predicted Stanley Cup final matchup?
Oh.
And I stored this stat in the back of my head. A while back, I have a friend who's a big gambler, big hockey gambler, and he's made a ton of money over the last decade by predicting or betting on the exact Stanley Cup final matchup. Like, he does it in March every year, and he throws a bunch of money on matchups that are 60-1, 80-1, 100-1, whatever it is. And he cashes huge tickets, and his thought process, without giving his secret away, is he's found that one stat above anything else is an incredible predictor of team success in the playoffs. And it's score adjusted Fenwick since March 1st. So every year from March 1st on, how does that team handle, you know, scoring attempts, unblocked shot attempts from March 1st on? So basically the most important chunk of the regular season. And I looked up the stat yesterday to help me answer the question. And I found that since March 1st, the Boston Bruins are second in that category.
Who's first?
Carolina, I think.
Ooh, all right. Yeah. And then you pick who is the top West team, Colorado, maybe.
They were actually a little bit further down. I'm going to find you the stat, but I was really intrigued by that.
Now I'm wondering, did you ask him, because the NHL usually finishes, you know, April 8th or 9th, and now it's
right. Later, you'd have to adjust it back a couple weeks this year because of the deadline. But it's also usually a good time to do it because teams are set at that point, right?
Totally. Yeah.
So if you're going on NHL.com this year, the stat is USAT percentage close. That's the category you look under if you want to keep tabs on it as we get closer. But the Hurricanes are one, the Bruins are two, the Panthers are three, and the Wild are four. They're the top team in the West. The Colorado Avalanche are down at 15.
Ooh. So that's
anyway, it may mean something. It may mean absolutely nothing. So I picked my Stanley Cup final matchup, oddly enough, to be Carolina against Minnesota. And my reasoning was, first off, I shouldn't be allowed to even pick a cup final matchup because I picked Winnipeg to win the Stanley Cup. They're not going to make the playoffs. This is the second time in 5 years that I've picked a Canadian team to win the cup and they didn't even make the playoffs. Ooh. Shout out to all you Oilers fans who still chirp me on social media. But I picked the Wild because I think if any team is properly geared up to take down the Avs in the Central, it's Minnesota. They're big. Their forward group is heavy. They've got skill. They can score. Their defense is mobile and they've got Flower in net now. They're a team that's pretty well set to at least go head to head with Colorado. And if anyone has a good chance to knock them off in that division, not saying Calgary on the other side, then I think it's Minnesota and in the East. Those other teams are going to be beating the crap out of each other in the first two rounds. Florida, Tampa, Boston, Toronto, if that's what it ends up being in that bracket.
Oh, and please, NHL gods, make the Metro and the Atlantic stay in their own divisions. I don't care how you make it. It looks like Washington's going to be the eighth seed. So then Carolina's got to win the number one, because it would be foolish if you don't have the Atlantic four and the Metro four playing each other. So
I agree with
still,
you.
So I would love to see the NHL make a quick change. No one should complain about it. If it's 4-4, we go move on. Everybody would agree, but they won't do it. But I do want to say one other thing, Frank. You mentioned Minnesota. I just wrote an article and I was looking up defensemen goals against per 60 at 5-on-5. And the best in the NHL, Jarrett Spurgeon from the Minnesota Wild. So that might match with your other statistic. He doesn't play the most minutes, right? He plays about 15 per game, which is still a lot. But, and that was prior to Fleury. So, and he's one of their top guys, plays tough matchups. He doesn't give up goals against, which to me is always a big stat. 5-on-5.
So it's wild to me though, that the sports books don't like Carolina at all. They've arguably been the most consistent team in the East. They haven't had any dips all year. They've been cruising right along at 720, 725 the entire season.
Yeah.
Tampa had a dip. Toronto obviously had a dip. Even Florida for a stretch in December, they had a dip.
Yeah. Boston started on a dip.
Like Carolina's never had one. So all these other teams are going to be beating the crap out of each other in the Atlantic. And not to say it's going to be a cakewalk in the Metro, but I don't know. I think there's a possibility that whoever gets through that second round looks at the conference final and takes a deep breath and is like, oh, it's Carolina. And then they get run over.
Yeah. Well, you look at it and like in the East, I'm not sure I would be much more comfortable in betting Colorado simply because I think they have less likelihood of having tougher matchups. Like the eight teams, even Washington, because of how they're built, they've got a little bit of uncertainty in goal. There's no question, but those other teams, I mentioned Boston and the Lindholm trade, like that is a huge deal for them. The Rangers have Shesterkin. I know they give up a ton of shots and everything, but they got Shesterkin and we've seen goalies steal stuff and Tampa's Tampa and Pittsburgh's got a boatload of experience and Tristan Jarry's playing out of his mind. Like I don't see like, regardless of how these seeds happen, when that first round starts, I think Carolina's favored. You know, I probably would like to think Florida's favored, but I don't think it's going to be massive, right? Like, I don't know if any of those teams lose this year that I'll be like, oh, geez, that's a big upset. Like, this isn't Columbus Tampa of 2019.
No, but what is kind of mind-blowing is that one of Tampa or Toronto is one of Tampa or Florida is not making it past the second round. That's still mind-blowing.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you look at where Tampa right now, Frank. Don't look now. Kucherov's struggle. He's got what, one goal in 10 games. John Cooper's even talked about seeing the struggle. Toronto is what? I think they're a point ahead of Tampa right now. Now Tampa has a game in hand and Boston's a game behind them. Like that race, Tampa, we could see a Tampa, Florida, Toronto, Boston first round in the Atlantic Division, which would be the best from a rivalry perspective.
Yeah. Is that still not likely though, is it?
Well, think about it. Boston's 1 point back of Tampa. So if Tampa goes to fourth and Boston's third, then it's Boston, Toronto, and it's Florida, Tampa. Right? Because right. Carolina has to beat Florida to make sure that they stay in their division, right? Because Washington looks like they're the number eight, the second wild card.
Okay, right? So let me just look at the
And points so percentage, playoff, Frank. I know you're
no, big points. No, not points percentage. I'm actually looking at hockeyviz.com. We talked about this before. Micah Blake McCurdy, he's always got this model and how it models out with the games remaining. Yeah. He says Florida's likeliest first round opponent is Washington, then Boston, then Tampa, then Toronto. So for Toronto, it is most likely is Boston.
Yeah, well, there
31%.
You go.
31%. There you go.
Hey,
but it's very close.
Yeah.
Boston 31, Tampa 29.
Yeah, so that's what I mean. Like, it's legit now. So it'll be a lot of fun. Now, we had Luke Robitaille on, switching to the West. Are you surprised the Kings did nothing?
Yeah. Well, first off, no players with term moved. I think they tried.
Yeah.
I think they tried on a few guys. I wouldn't be surprised if they were in the mix on Arturi Lehkonen. Guys under control, I think, was their key. And the contenders stepped up to pay the big prices to get those guys.
Yeah, Tampa, there was.
Colorado, they got Hagel. Colorado got Lehkonen. Those teams were willing to pay for guys that especially don't make a ton. And Lehkonen's going to be due a raise, so it'll be interesting to see if Colorado ends up keeping him or they end up flipping him in the summer, because they've got a ton of guys to pay as well.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, I know Edmonton fans are wondering what happens to their team, because you got Kane as an UFA, and then you have Yamamoto and Puljujarvi who are RFAs, so guys are going to have to get raises, and Yamamoto's on fire right now. He's got 7 goals in his last 8 games, so he's pushing probably score 20. You score 20, your arbitration number. Like NHL teams would love to have MLB arbitration. NHL players would hate it, but because it's a significant, like NHL players
would like to have MLB top end contracts.
Yeah, well, that's
true. 4 years, $200 million. Are you kidding me?
Goodness, yeah, it's
you could, if $200 million, you could get like 5 years ago, that would buy you the Florida Panthers and half of the Coyotes.
Yeah,
you could have an entire franchise.
Yeah, that's a different world for sure. Now, Frank, I know Tyler had asked us before. I thought Colorado was going to be the busiest team. They end up adding 4 players. If you look at the trade deadline week, right? You mentioned Lehkonen, and they got Cogliano, they got Manson. I think they checked a lot of boxes. The Colorado Avalanche and Joe Sakic.
Who was the fourth guy?
Cogliano, Lehkonen, Manson, and Sturm.
Sturm. Oh, right. The Sturm for Joe Swap.
Yeah.
Forgot about that one.
And I look at Colorado, and man, like, they check boxes. Sturm can win some faceoffs and kill penalties. Manson gives them a physical banger on the back end. Cogliano, they needed some speed in their bottom six. And, you know, Lehkonen's just, you know, you've been trumping him since early February as a real good jack of all trades, helpful player, can do a, like, to me, he easily fits the mold of a Goudreau Coleman for Tampa a few years ago. If we're going off a kind of like the, what you want to add to a team, man, I really like what Colorado did. And it was injuries have been their big issue, Frank. If you look at the postseason, the last 2 years, if they stay healthy, man, it's hard to think anyone in the West is knocking them out.
When I did the story outlining every team's deadline priority, I said, what do the Colorado Avalanche need? Health.
No.
That was it. That was the answer. So they need it from their goaltenders, especially. That's really their key. You know, I think that was definitely a cause for trepidation and concern for Colorado. You know, even just approaching the deadline, we think these guys have played really well. Their numbers are fantastic. Can they stay healthy? That's it. And wow. It's funny, that story that I wrote the it was imitated as well about the five players that could be this year's Barkley Goodrow or Blake Coleman. A couple of them ended up getting moved.
Yeah.
Brandon Hagel, number one, Arturi Lehkonen on the list as well. Like, it's interesting that teams were kind of going through that, clearly that same exercise in terms of where can we find value to add these types of pieces to our team.
What do you make of Tampa Bay and you know, what they gave up for Hagel?
Well, I think on paper it sounds like a lot, but I think when you go back and you review the fourth round picks that went to Tampa, they don't look like on paper they mean a lot. But when you consider that the two first rounders that they gave up are likely going to be in the 30s anyway, it's basically like they traded down two rounds.
Yeah.
They didn't get out of the draft totally. They traded down two rounds. And it's almost like it's a great return for Chicago because they're not going to be good for a while. And that contract for Hagel is worth way more to Tampa than it is to Chicago. That's why he ended up moving. But the two fourth round picks kind of stuck with me. Like, this isn't really as big of a price as it may seem. It was like trading two fourths for 2 seconds.
Yeah. Well, I think two things, because I know you'd asked me, if I was Chicago, I said, I'm not trading Hagel unless I'm getting, you know, enough back to make it worthwhile. And so I think for Chicago, that made it worthwhile. There's two first rounders. Now, for this trade to work out for Chicago, your scouts got to do their job. This is where you're putting your trust in your scouts, because first round picks on paper, they're still, people hear first round pick and they get excited, right? They think Ovechkin and, you know, they think the top end guys. And sure, hey, there's Corey Perry's that could be taken late in the first round. Let's make no mistake about it. But there's also, there can be lots of misses. So those picks and that trade, it could look in the future very good for Chicago, but it's going to rest on their drafting development. No question. Otherwise, it's just, we got quantity. We didn't get quality.
Once you get past seventh overall, it's like really a roll of the dice. That's like traditionally the cutoff. Like, you know, in the top seven, you're getting pretty much a bona fide guaranteed NHL player. There's a lot of guys, the draft is littered with guys in the teens and 20s that never played.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of scouts tell me they think it's 20 and that it used to be earlier, but they feel there's a little bit more depth because teams have figured out overall how to develop better. They don't rush kids as much. We see them, some guys send kids back to junior for another year. You know, they keep them out of the AHL if they're Europeans for a little bit longer. So they're smartening up a bit. But yeah, you're right, Frank. Like, I had scouts tell me once you get to pick 20 to pick 50, they think they're all the same.
Exactly. So, you know, for Chicago, like, the other interesting part of it is, like, you remember a number of years back, they traded Ryan Hartman.
Yes.
He was a couple years older than Hagel, but on a similar contract. And they also got a first round pick for him. Hartman had 19 goals that year when he was traded, and Hagel was at 21 when he got traded. Looking back on it now, you'd say you'd trade Ryan Hartman for a first round pick all day long.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying Hagel is going to become Ryan Hartman, because I think he's a better player. I think he brings more to the table, but this trade. It's so polarizing depending on who you talk to and how you view the player. I felt like the people that were ripping the Lightning for what they gave up didn't watch or haven't watched Brandon Hagel closely enough to understand his game. Like, anyone that had commentary about, oh, well, his shooting percentage is 22%. You don't watch. Almost all of his goals have been scored within a 5-foot area around the net. It's totally, you could duplicate that year in and year out, given how close he is to the net. It's like Shaq having a high shooting percentage. Of course he does. He dunks the ball 8 times a game.
Yeah. Well, I remember when Draisaitl broke out as a goal scorer. That was the number one. Oh, his regression. Well, Draisaitl's pretty much hovered around a 20% shooter. He's not a high volume shooter. He scores, you know, he doesn't waste shots. Some guys will shoot from everywhere. There's nothing wrong with that. Right. So you're right. You can't, I get the average of shooting percentage. And for a team, you can crunch numbers, and there's enough data to tell you that, you know, that will itself even out a little bit. But there are some players that are going to be higher shooting percentage players. players. Simply there is, right? That's kind of been proven out over time. And you're right, especially guys like Ryan Smith, guys who don't shoot from distance very often. More often, they're going to have a better shooting percentage because they don't take as many shots. And then they're shooting from a higher percentage chance of scoring.
Here's the bottom line takeaway for me on the trade is that this actually, I think, is a win for both sides. Chicago gets their two first round picks. They get two players that they can use. They were used to help make the money work going back to Tampa. But you look at Radish and the chemistry that he had in junior with DeBrincat and with Strome, you know, all having 100-point seasons that year in Erie. That's a guy you plug in and try out, see what you can get from him. Boris Kachuk, like another guy, a bona fide NHL player that wasn't given the opportunity to really move up the lineup at all in Tampa. Two first, two NHL players. You can see why it makes sense for them. And you can also see why it makes sense for Tampa. They've now got, you know, three playoffs with Brandon Hagel at a minuscule cap hit for a guy that scored 20 on a bad team and could easily score more than that in the right position on a great team.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Was there any trade that you're kind of like, meh, like it's a trade. I'm not sure it's going to help the contending team.
Oh, a contending team. I thought that was the perfect opportunity to turn a side eye toward the Travis Hamonic to Ottawa deal.
No. Well, I think Ottawa, like I'm assuming they're going for the personality and character of a guy like Hamonic. No,
I guess. I mean, nah. I heard the opposite of how he acted in Vancouver, but that's just me.
Okay.
I was very surprised, even just on the contract alone, to get a team to take one more year on a player that's been a very marginal player at $3 million and to give you a third round pick for it. I was very surprised.
Well, when they ship out, so you can't come to the part that I raised an eyebrow is, so you're going to lose Nick Paul. Because I think because you can't get to a contract negotiation. And I still
they never got all close.
Yeah. And I just don't understand why they couldn't have got close. But then you're going to pay the money for Hamonic. Like that seems to me
an organization. That's the first thing I said to myself, $3 million, that's the money for Nick Paul.
Yeah. So I don't, it's like there's still a lack of direction in where the organization's going because you knew exactly what you had in Nick Paul. And right now today, Nick Paul's a more impactful player than Travis Hamonic.
I think the ask from the Paul camp was 4 years times $3 million. Wow. I'm totally going out on a limb when I say this and hypothesizing. I bet if it came down to it that they might have done 3 times 3.
Yeah.
If you pushed a little bit on term, the number never started with a 3 from Ottawa's side. They were always in the 2s.
Yeah. And you know what? If you get to 2.8 or 9 and you're that close, you'd think you'd figure it out.
Just do it.
Now, I know that the Ryan Smith, hey, there was $100,000 back in 2007. Well, hey, that's what spurred on OilersNation.com, really, that trade. So which led many years later to Daily Faceoff. So sometimes that's a good thing. But that combination of trades, right? Because I was on record. I'm still on record. I think Ottawa is going to regret that, not signing Nick Paul, because I don't think his ask was going to be outrageous, that it's going to set you back in your cap and limit you, especially on a team that's not close to the cap.
Mm-hmm. What about Vancouver and the Tyler Mott trade and just the reaction from it? Like, remember leading in, it was like breathless reporting. They're only going to take a top 40 pick for Tyler Mott or else they're not trading him. Does any market, and this is me saying it as a Tyler Mott fan. I think he is one of the rare line drivers that you can reliably put in the bottom six. Like I really think he's a quality player and an important piece on a really good team. Does any fan base or market overvalue their players like Vancouver?
Whew. That's a good question. I'd have to look. I think everybody's guilty of it. I get trade requests all the time, and usually the trade requests are really benefiting their team, which I understand that's what fans are supposed to do, right? Because sometimes you're valuing your player without necessarily seeing enough of the opposition one. But yeah, I did chuckle when I heard a top 40 pick, and I'm like, you know, Mott's a bottom six guy, and you know, he's really good penalty killer. He's an energy guy, Frank, but so is Brendan Hagel, but Brendan Hagel has 21 goals, right? That to me.
Yeah, like, but over his last 82 going into the trade deadline, Tyler Mott had 14.
Yeah, but that's a big jump still, right?
Yeah, no, it is. It's 50%. But
I think that's a trade where I firmly believe what the GM texted me on Friday. Trades are the price for some guys are going to come down near the deadline. And I think at the end, Vancouver was like, we're not going to re-sign this guy. So we're just going to take what we can get.
And price came down on a lot of guys. That's what always happens. Like, look at Max Domi and that deal getting in at 259 before the 3 o'clock deadline. Carolina essentially got him for free.
So can I ask you a question? Why would Florida, like, man, that prospect must be really good because you're helping a potential, a team that you could meet in the conference final. That was a little surprising. Yeah, I think
it was just a free sixth round pick.
Yeah, right? But would you do that? Like, what if Domi and scores a big goal against Florida in the conference final? You know what I mean?
A lot of things need to happen in order for that.
But I'm just a little surprised that's the team you would do it for. Yeah, that's all. Usually you don't see it. Usually the third party team that you had, I think you even had third party teams in your top 50, and rightfully so, that it was a team that was still in the running against a team that they could meet up. That's okay. Like, it might not meet up, so it might be irrelevant, but I found that a little intriguing.
Florida was the most eager team to use their cap space with the Aaron Ekblad LTIR.
Yeah. Okay.
I listed them as the top team to be a third party broker because they wanted to be in the mix. They were like, we just traded away so many picks. Even if we're getting late ones back, it's just one more bullet in the chamber for us when we get to the draft that we otherwise wouldn't have had. And so for them to use their cap space that they were going to lose anyway, I think it's a little bit of an antiquated feel or thinking to say, well, we're not going to do it because it's Carolina.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And hey,
you take the pick wherever you can get it because the odds that they win both rounds and you win both rounds. I mean, Tyler could probably tell us what they would be. It would be pretty small.
No. I've done. Yeah, the percentage of getting those two are both going to be in the final. Obviously, is pretty low, especially with how tight it is in the Eastern Conference right now. Now, Frank, you had the big story yesterday. Speaking of cap space money, and hey, man, I've been pumping this. We've been talking about this for months. So I was quite excited to read your article yesterday about a very simple thing. And we've taught this was very simple. Have a cap in the playoffs. And this one's even, a little bit better because it's only 20-man roster, which I understand because if there are the odd team who's cap compliant, because the salary cap, for those who don't really understand it, it's every day. So you can technically accrue more space if you don't go over all the time. And then at the trade deadline, in theory, you can add a little bit more at that time that makes it look like you're over the cap, but you haven't been over the cap because you've accrued space. So, but never is like, it's never going to be enough to compensate over to be like, $2.5 million or anything, which would be three minimum contract players. So I love this idea, Frank. I know it won't come in this year, but like the NHL's got to incorporate this, do they not? Like, it seems like a no-brainer.
I don't know that the league itself is sold on it actually being an issue. I think that they see why teams would be upset. They also know that it's a pretty unique set of circumstances that have to come into play. It involves basically a season-ending injury or regular season-ending injury for a player well ahead of the deadline that is also a player that's a big enough cap hit to have you add a player of significance at the deadline and be able to use this quote-unquote loophole.
Yeah, like it's rare. I get it. Like Chicago did it with Patrick Kane. And I think that I believe wholeheartedly Mark Stone's injured. So I don't question that. I think where the teams question, like a Kucherov, had Kucherov been able to play in the last week of the season last year?
Well, he was able to play.
Yeah.
He started skating 6 weeks before the season ended.
So those are the examples where now you wait a week. Now, hey, it's rare for, like, you have to be elite talent to not play as long as Kucherov does, come in the playoffs and be that good. So let's give him credit. But I can see why teams would say, hey, you know what? If you want to hold out the guy, and no one questions the legitimacy of the injury at the start of when they're injured, it's the timeline of, like, I think people were looking at Vegas. And, if Mark Stone would have been out, maybe he's ready to play. He's not ready to play now, of course, but maybe he's ready on April 20th. But they hold him out until April 29th. Now the season's over. He comes back for the playoffs. That's a huge benefit to your team. So at least making it compliant that your roster roster has to be cap compliant, like it solves that issue for me.
Yeah. And it doesn't hurt. Look, you can add all the guys you want in the regular season. The only point is the team you ice on that night in the playoffs needs to be under 81.5.
Yeah.
I don't care who you have. You can dress as many as you want as long as they're under 81.5. Meaning you can dress as many of the big names as you want as long as the math works. Sit out one of your other big guns if you want to and make the choice roster wise.
Yeah, I love it. I really hope they do it. It doesn't
stop anyone from helping their team when someone is injured.
Yes.
I think, and that's the point of it. It's just that everyone, once you get to the most important, most critical time of the year, that everyone's playing on a level playing field.
Yeah, it's a simple fix that it's like the fix 4-4, Frank. These are two fixes that could happen very easily that do not change the integrity of the game. In fact, maybe it benefits it in the cap world, but it has it. So it's better for the league overall. It's more of a fair statement and it helps rivalries of 4-on-4. Those two things should be the easiest changes that the GMs make.
So people were up in arms about me again pointing out on Thursday about Kucherov. Like, I just want to reiterate for anyone listening, there was never any issue with Nikita Kucherov being injured. The issue was that they planned it out and timed it out and never made any moves on their roster so that he would sit out the entire season. Like, so let's rewind for 1 second. It is a very easy timeline to explain. The Tampa Bay Lightning win the Stanley Cup in September. Free agency opens in October and they have a team that's way over the cap and they don't make any moves. They don't trade away any of their players. And we're all going, how's this team going to be cap compliant? Lo and behold, October passes, November passes, Christmas passes, and Nikita Kucherov undergoes surgery in the last week in December. Oh, okay. What's the timeline for Nikita Kucherov's injury? Some may say, oh, well, this would only work in a shortened pandemic season, a 56 game season. Maybe they're right. Either way, they gamed it out to the point where they knew that Kucherov would be back for game one of the playoffs. And he was skating 6 weeks before the season ended. He probably could have played with 3 weeks left.
Yeah.
There are other potential solutions instead of the one that I wrote about. The other is just that if a player is on LTIR at the last day of the regular season, that he must sit out the first round. That's another potential option. The other one is if he's been on LTIR for half the season or more, then he needs to sit out for the first two rounds. Or the other one could be that if you want to be used in the playoffs, you must be on the cap and fit on the cap. Even if you're not playing, you must fit on the cap by the last day of the regular season. There's all sorts of ways to do this to prevent teams from loading up, which I believe was the goal or the plan of the Vegas Golden Knights the entire time.
Well, it's definitely hard to argue with that one. I think
they made the trade for Jack Eichel in November, knowing that Mark Stone's injury was bad enough that they could put him on LTIR the rest of the year and not have any cap consequences.
Yeah. Interesting. So, well, it might not matter now, Frank, because now the Vegas Golden Knights, they did get a huge win last night, 6-1 over Nashville. And I know if people I know if people go to NHL.com right now, they'll be confused because it hasn't updated a lot of the games from last night yet. There's something wrong with their server because it still has the amount of games played the same as yesterday, right? Like if you look at Edmonton, it still says they've got 64 games played. They've now played 65, I'm pretty sure. So, because they have 17 games left now. Or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that was game 64. I have to double check, but because I thought they were 3 points back of LA and then last night LA lost in overtime and Edmonton won. So they should be two.
But yeah, I actually thought
that. No, it's right. Cause they were at 75 points. They had to go 10-8 to get to 95 and it still says that. So yeah, they haven't updated LA or Edmonton, any of the late games. And I have to double check if they've even updated the early ones.
I don't know that they did because I think Boston was only 2 points back, 1 point back of Tampa. And I think they're now past them.
Okay. Well, there you go. So that'll change it when it gets, maybe by the time our pod's live, it might be updated, but Be sure to check the games played. And if it doesn't say your team has added a game, then obviously something's up with the server. Let's bring in Tyler Yaremchuk for a rip-roaring edition of Buy or Sell.
Yes, it's the people's favorite segment of the week. People always say they can barely sleep on Thursday because they know a buy or sell segment is coming on Friday. It's brought to you by our friends at DoorDash. Promo code RUNDOWNDD gets you 25% off and no delivery fees on your first order.
Ding dong.
It's Friday.
It's the best thing going.
All right. Moritz Seider. Boy, there was a lot of buzz about Big Mo Seider on the Red Wings blue line this week.
Mo money.
And a lot of talk of, is he going to get Norris votes this year? Which I think might be a little premature, but your first buy or sell question. Moritz Seider will have a Norris within 4 years. Jason, you buying or selling?
Oh, man. It's a good
question. It's a loaded field, right? When you look at who he'd have to be kind of dethroning.
Look at how many Norris trophies Victor Hedman's won. So I'm going to say no.
I'm going to sell as well. Kale McCarr, Calder. He finished in ninth place in the Norris trophy race as a rookie. So yes, Moritz Seider will get Norris trophy votes, probably in a five spot or something like that. And I just think there's so many guys in line ahead of him to get Norris trophies that I can't guarantee that he gets one in 4 years. McCarr, Heiskanen, there's a lot of vets that are still in that category.
Hey boys,
Yossi might have what, a 90 point season. Like
have you seen what Roman Yossi's been doing lately? It's unbelievable. It's like Roman Yossi is sixth in the, what is he, sixth or seventh in the NHL in scoring after Kyle Connor scored his 40th last night. But there was so much talk, McCarr and Hedman. That's it. Roman Yossi, he might be the favorite now. Look at his numbers. Like, they're unbelievable. But that's going to be a great vote between the three of them.
Yeah. He's on pace for 103 points. My math was off.
Yeah.
103. What's the last 100 point defenseman we had?
And it's not even like he's on like an offensive juggernaut of a team. Like, it's Nashville. Like, they're good, but it's not like, right? It's not like he's doing it with like Colorado or Tampa Bay, where it's like he's surrounded by offensive superstars.
Is Paul Coffey the last 100 point defenseman?
I was thinking Brian Leetch, but
Coffey had 103 in 1990.
Yeah, Leetch had 102 in 92.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
No one else has done it since then, huh?
Nope, not since then. The closest, and I'm just looking this up, the closest since then, Ray Bourque had 91 in 94. So since 94, then Leetch had 85 in 96. Brent Burns
had one in the 80s.
Brent Burns had 83 in 2019. And
Carlson had one, yeah.
82. So yeah. Roman Yossi is going to beat both of those. This is the greatest offensive season we've seen from a defenseman in almost 30 years. So it's, because if he gets into the 90s, then he'll definitely be the most since 92, which is 30 years, which is crazy.
Wow.
I mean, you adjust for era with that as well, potentially, right? I know people like to do that. It's crazy. Next one, a name that didn't move at the deadline, but has certainly had his name in the rumor mill is Sean Monahan. I'm going to say Sean Monahan will not be a Flame next season. Frank, you buying or selling?
Buying. I think there is a 5% chance that he is a Flame next season.
All right. He might be a healthy scratch tonight against Arizona, they're talking. So, man, it's funny in Calgary, when you have to re-sign Johnny Gaudreau and Matthew Tkachuk, who are UFA, RFA, some money's got to go out. Mm-hmm. But, man, now Monahan could completely salvage himself. Depends on
that's how why teams are interested.
Yeah, because I look at Sean Monahan, and up until the middle of last year, same draft class, he had more goals than Nathan MacKinnon. Like, he's been a consistent, 28 to 30 goals.
He's 30-30 every year for like five straight years.
And so I'm wondering, honestly, guys, like, I've looked at a lot of times when you see consistent players and then they have like this dip. I wonder if Monahan is playing and he's got some sort of lingering injury. Because if the wheels have completely fallen off, That's an outlier. Usually there's something else. So I think there'd be value, but I will also buy. And I think Calgary's going to move him because they have no choice, because they'd rather keep Tkachuk and Gaudreau. And I understand. And even if Monahan's good, they'd still probably rather keep Tkachuk and Gaudreau.
Yeah, I don't think they'll have a lot of trouble moving a Sean Monahan. The next name on my list here is Jonathan Toews. And I'm going to say, Frank, we talked about this a little bit on the Daily Faceoff show earlier this week. I'm going to say Jonathan Toews will not be a Blackhawk next season. He's got that big $10.5 million cap hit. I don't know if a trade's possible. Maybe a buyout's more likely. Who knows? But Jonathan Toews will not be a Blackhawk next season. Gregor, buying or selling?
Ooh, there was so much talk, and you know, the Hawks, I don't even know, you know, buying out, I guess they would save some money, sure, but they don't necessarily need to. And I'd have to look. Is, I can't remember, was his contract, is he making the same amount of money as cap space next year? If he's got a lower,
A little lower.
So he's got a little lower. So then that might do it. But I think
buy him out. And over the next two seasons, I looked at the buyout the other day. It's like a $9 million cap hit next year and like a $900,000 the year after. So they would actually save $500,000 in cap space. Go ahead. I want you to finish your point first.
Yeah. So to me, I'm not sure. It's not enough for a team that's not a cap space team, unless there's some other issues where they just feel Toews can't play. So I'm going to sell and say that he remains in Chicago, because I don't think there's a big trade market. Even at 50%, there's probably not a big trade market.
I'm going to buy, and I'm going to say that he's not back next year, just because he's obviously been pretty vocal and isn't happy about what's going on there. Disheartening is the word that he used previously. He said, well, if Hagel's the guy getting traded from here, like, I don't know how we're going to do this. And seems like a lot of, I don't want to say whining, but it's like, he hasn't held up his end of the bargain on his contract. So he's a shell of his former self. And yes, I get Jonathan Toews, the ultimate leader, part of three Stanley Cups, a huge part of them. One of the most dedicated and decorated players of his generation, but stop crying. Like, that's what it feels like to me. It's like your team has fallen on hard times. They also haven't won a playoff series since you signed your $10.5 million deal. Your deal, and it's not anything on him. His contract and Patrick Kane's contract took a lot out of the Hawks being competitive from a cap perspective. Because you got to remember, back 7 years ago, the cap was started. It was probably still in the 60s then.
Yeah. I will say this. Patrick Kane has lived up to his deal 100%. It's Toews.
100%.
Yeah.
So Toews, it just feels like they might be better off cutting the cord if that's the attitude that he's going to have. He needs to shape up his attitude, or else it doesn't make a lot of sense for them to even have him around.
Last one I got for you. It's the PointsBet bonus question brought to you by our friends at PointsBet Canada. How about this for a weird little like betting anomaly, I'll call it. The Vegas Golden Knights, 20-1 still to win the Stanley Cup. They are right tied with the Rangers. They have better Stanley Cup odds than the Bruins, Blues, Oilers, Capitals, Preds, Kings, and Stars. Yet when you go to look at their odds to make the playoffs, they're minus 200 to miss the playoffs. So you barely make any money betting on them to miss the playoffs, but they have better Stanley Cup odds than like six or seven teams who are looking like they're close to locks to making the playoffs. That's just a weird thing I wanted to get out there, because it just shows you how odd and finicky the betting market can be sometimes. But if the playoffs ended today, the playoff matchups would be, and yes, Frank, I did this based on points percentage. Don't worry. And I made sure to add in the games from last night because NHL.com doesn't know how. In the West, it would be Colorado, Dallas, mini St. Louis, Calgary, Nashville, LA, Edmonton. And then in the East, it would be Florida, Washington. Then it would be Boston, Carolina, Pittsburgh, New York, Toronto, Boston. Which one of those potential first round matchups would produce the most entertaining series is your points bet question. Frank,
I thought your question was going to be which one of these matchups has the greatest chance for an upset. And sure, my answer was going to be Nashville over Calgary, just because I could see UC Saros stealing a series.
And they have the greatest offensive defenseman ever in Roman Josi.
But Calgary is going to be a tough out, I think, regardless. That team's built for the playoffs, so stand by on that. What were the Atlantic Division matchups again?
It would be Florida, Washington, Tampa, Boston.
Who's Toronto?
Because neither one.
Toronto, Boston.
Oh, no, you have Boston twice.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Toronto, Tampa. Jeez.
Yeah. Okay.
Probably Toronto, Tampa, because there's a lot of pressure on the Leafs to win a first round series. And frankly, there's with what the Lightning added, there's pressure on them to keep their run going.
I'm actually going to go a little old school and think back to the days of the Norris division. And I think Saint, like Frank talked earlier, like I would love to see Minnesota Nashville because both those teams have bulked up, man. That would be an old slobber knocker series. But I think the Blues still can play that way. So from an entertainment standpoint, I don't think either team has a chance to win the cup. Unfortunately, I think there's better teams. But from an entertainment wise, I think that first round matchup, the Blues and the Wild could be entertaining, man. Like I would love to see Nashville and Minnesota right now. Those two teams, they both added a lot. They had a lot of physicality, had a lot of big players. And they both added more of them. I would love to see them. It would just be old school. The only problem is hardly anyone would watch the games because they start at 8:45. Unfortunately, I feel sorry for Central fans. I'm just going to put that out there right in advance. I feel sorry for Central Time Zone fans because in the first round, man, they get bent over with start times.
All right, that will do it. Slobber knocker was not a word I was expecting to hear in this week's edition of Buy or Sell, but that'll be a wrap presented by DoorDash.
Ding dong.
So good. Gets me every time.
Oh, it does. It is odd, but it's true, man. I feel sorry. I'm just Central fans. If you can, and I know that science says we can't really bank sleep, but my goodness, if you could, because that sucks for young kids, man. Like that first round matchup. I don't know. They got to try to figure out a way to change it because it's brutal.
I was just thinking as you read off the matchups and like, which one would I like to go and cover? Like which one is the most interesting?
Oh, well, Tampa, Toronto, because you got a chance of a team going for a three-peat, which hasn't happened since the early 80s, right? And then you've got a team that's one of the bigger markets that has tons of coverage and arguably one of the biggest fan bases around. So there's lots of pressure. Yeah, that would I could see that one. But the only thing I don't like about Tyler's outline is that it has crossover that's unnecessary. Boo. I'm just going to say that right now. Boo.
So my thing is points percentage. Your thing is crossover.
No, but even if it wasn't, even if you went it on points, Frank, right now.
No, I know, but I'm saying you hate the crossover and I hate that people quote standings without points percentage. So we each have our quirks.
But the good news is at the end of the regular season, the points percentage and the points are the same. Well, but the crossover
is
still there.
They should be, but...
Yeah, the crossover is still there. So, boo. Hopefully, NHL. Hey, Gary, Bill, hello, wake up. This is good for your league. It's a very simple solution. Stay in your divisions when it's 4-4. It's like the easiest solution possible. We might have to just get... Is this what we do now? And we should get an online petition.
Should I ask this question at the GM meetings next week?
You better. If you don't ask, I'll be pissed off. Yes, ask the question. Like, why aren't they doing it? Like you say, you want rivalries, you build your schedule around that and then you completely obliterate it in the postseason. Like there's no reason to do it.
Crazy.
Yeah. Frankie, have yourself a great week and a weekend. There's some big games to watch for this weekend. I'm looking forward to it. And we will, I'll say another thing, Frank, if you're looking to travel, there's one series now, it would only happen potentially in the second round that hasn't happened in 30 years. It's trending potentially that the Oilers and Flames could meet for the first time.
That's actually what I was going to say is I think I might keep my powder dry in the first round and wait because the second round matchups between that and also Tampa, Florida could be so juicy that they're more important than the first round matchups, which it's almost always the other way around. The first round is almost always more interesting than the second. This year it's building to a crescendo in the second round.
And hey, what about the fact, Frank? Toronto, Boston again. Who doesn't want to see that?
Yeah.
Because Leaf fans eventually they're like, we gotta win. Right?
We gotta slay the dragon at some point.
Oh, like
I think they would win that series.
Could you imagine Tampa, Florida first round, Boston, Toronto first round? It could happen.
If the Leafs, if that ends up being their series that they get and they lose, like that's the one they should be the favorite in. That's probably the only first round matchup they should be the favorite in.
With Lindholm addition, I don't know if I'd say that, man. Boston's been really good. You just you quoted your U.S.
Come on, man. The Leafs have been the way better team all year.
But your stat that you just said, Frank, USAT stat. Where's Boston? They're ranked higher, and now they just added Lindholm.
I'm literally just saying if that's the series they get and they lose, that's the one where I think you just
okay. You blow everything up. Well, let's have it happen, Frank. I want it for the intrigue. Florida, Tampa, Boston, Toronto.
I root for chaos.
Hockey gods, please make it happen. Everybody have a great weekend. Enjoy it. The playoff picture will get a little bit clearer by the time we talk to you next.
Thanks for listening to the DFO Rundown with Saravalli and Gregor. Keep it locked on dailyfaceoff.com and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode. Delivered by DoorDash.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Are you ready for playoff hockey? Well, listen up, because I've got something for you. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game day, you're going to be faced with 4 questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle. And here's a sneak peek into some of the questions we'll be firing your way. First up, you got to pick the winning team. Simple, right? But there's more. You gotta decide if the total for the game is going to go over or under a certain amount, and the strategy doesn't stop there. Next up, you're picking which player is going to light the lamp first, and finally, you gotta predict which period in the game is going to be the highest scoring. Will it be a barn burner in the first, a shootout in the second, or a nail biter in the third? That is all up to you. Now let's talk prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. That's right. Treat yourself to some nation gear or even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the round winners, cash money. Cold, hard cash. We're putting real dough in your pockets simply for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. It's game time, folks. Head over to games.dailyfaceoff.com now and prove your puck prowess.